When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day. Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian. Hey guys, I know we're all working so hard to stay fit and healthy at home. So check out my app. I have free daily 7-minute workouts. Download the app. It's Jillian Michaels Fitness app. Download it. Do the 7-minute workouts. You don't need any equipment. There's total body workouts, ab workouts, leg workouts. You get a new one every single day. And if you want more, obviously, there's a heck of a lot more in the app. There's over 1,000 different exercises. All of my DVD workouts are in the app. I can customize a workout for you in the app. There's freaking yoga, kickboxing, HIIT training, outdoor runs, bodyweight training, free weights. There are thousands of recipes, no matter what your diet preferences are. But at the very least, please do the 7-minute workouts for free. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Keeping It Real. Schminder Dogs.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, small friend that I can see through my Zoom screen. Ooh, guys, I am excited because our last guest for the month of January is by far one of the most inspirational women I've ever had the pleasure of interviewing, to be honest. And it is the greatest skier in the world, downhill racer Lindsey Vonn. And I've wanted to interview her forever, her and Serena Williams. And we finally got Lindsey, so hopefully Serena is next. And I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a braver, more disciplined, more skilled athlete than Lindsey Vonn. I mean, yeah. Cindy, you were just telling me how you used to watch her and, fear for her life.
I mean, because she was always so committed, and it didn't matter what her last injury was, she'd get back up there and she'd be flying. And I would I would fear for her life.
They go about 80 miles an hour, I think.
It's insane.
Yeah,
but it's on like skis. It's like, to me, she has always been the most exciting skier to watch.
I find, you know, and I mean no disrespect to any sport, but I find the stakes to make her as an athlete that much more compelling because, you know, you're on the court. Amazing, right? You're on the field. Amazing. Football players risk their lives. But for the most part, it is not a life or death situation every time you engage in your activity. For downhill skiers, I don't know if there are, I mean, there's motorcycle racing. They have full armor on, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what other, maybe Formula One, I'm not sure. Like, what other sport is this dangerous? what other sport requires this much skill to be able to make decisions in a split second because you're flying at 80 miles an hour, right? I mean,
yeah.
Literally, you have to make decisions in a split second. And to do that, injured at times, right? To come back from an injury, to become the greatest and stay the greatest in spite of it all. I want to know, what drives a person like that? What is the practice of a person like that? What can we take from a Lindsey Vonn and incorporate to be great in our own lives? And no, none of us need to be the top in the world. I'm not the top in the world, you know, to be 1 out of 7 billion. It's, you know, bad odds. But it's 1 in 7 billion. So, you know, it's bad odds. But what I also find so fascinating about Lindsey is that she will tell you that she was not, you know, born a specimen of fitness. And so her practice and her mindset and her regimen, her discipline is all something that any of us can do if we choose to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? There's nothing about Lindsey that's out of our reach. And she, you know, she's gonna tell us all that, actually. So in fact, instead of me just talking about her, why don't we take a quick break, and then we will be right back with Lindsey Vonn to inspire us as we go forward into 2021. So it's a new year, and I wanted to find some new things to add to my wardrobe. So I decided on a few things from Everlane. Now, one of the reasons that I love Everlane is that they're committed to creating quality clothing with ethical factories and radical transparency. And every piece is made with the finest sustainable materials with a timeless design that will stay relevant for years to come. I'm obsessed with my black cashmere crew. It's soft, it fits me amazing, and it looks as good with jeans as it does with sweatpants. And speaking of jeans, Everlane has all kinds of styles so you can find the perfect cut and stretch level for your body. Plus, they're made from organic cotton at the world's cleanest denim factory with zero landfill waste. Go to everlane.com/Jill and sign up for 10% off your first order, plus free shipping, and get easy returns within 60 days of your ship date. That's 10% off your first order when you go to everlane.com/Jill and sign up. Everlane.com/Jill. I think we've all spent a lot more time with our pets this year, and I don't know about you, but I've noticed that mine are a lot itchier or smellier than I remember, so I decided to check out Scout's Honor. They're my new go-to for grooming products like shampoo, conditioner, and deodorizer. Scout's Honor probiotic products are scientifically proven as a natural solution for treating your pet's skin problems. Plus, they come in a choice of amazing fragrances, including fragrance-free. But my favorite is the honeysuckle. And both of my dogs just smell so much better, and that means they get to sleep in the bed, so they're pretty happy about that. I absolutely love that for every purchase, Scout's Honor provides a day worth of meals for a rescue animal. And to receive 20% off your first order, go to scoutshonor.com/Jillian. And remember, that's Scouts with a K, scoutshonor.com/Jillian for 20% off your order. Scout's Honor, natural and preventative grooming solutions for pets. All right, we are back with the greatest skier in the world, Lindsey Vonn. Lindsey, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm psyched to be here.
So you already know that I'm a huge fan of yours. And I got to be honest, I was trying to do a little research on your accolades because I thought, oh, I'll just kind of put her greatness in context. And to be fair, the list is a bit ridiculous. I was wondering if you could do me the solid of sort of tooting your own horn for a second and listing some of your accolades in your sport, because it's overwhelming, to be honest. I figured you might be able to rattle it off pretty quick. Tell me a little bit about your professional career.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm not really good at the tooting of the horn.
I can't remember all the World Cups and how, like, sometimes there were closeouts where you shut everybody out and got all three of the races.
And then you were the first one to get a gold medal, like in downhill ski. Like it's, I mean, you've been called, you were the greatest skier of all time. You are.
There's one guy. Well, there's one guy that has more wins than I do, which irks me, but it's okay. I'm cool with what I got.
One guy.
Yeah. Okay. It's, yeah. You know, it's okay. I have 82 wins and he has 86. But I have 3 Olympic medals. I have 20 World Cup titles. I have, I think, 8 World Championship medals. I think I have like 137 podiums, something like that.
Oh, okay. So you've been skiing a while then?
Just a couple of years. Just a couple of years.
So I want to tell you this story. One time I was doing the Stand Up to Cancer event and they put me next to Kobe Bryant. And I remember thinking to myself, like, holy shit, that's Kobe Bryant. And I was a little intimidated and he was kind enough to kind of sort of notice that and say hello. And I was like, all right, I have to ask you, what does it feel like to be the greatest in the world at something? And we started talking and he's like, I don't really think about, you know, right now anymore. I think about the people that came before me and wanting to have more rings than Michael Jordan, or, you know what I mean? And you've surpassed that. So before we get into the background, because I want the origin story, I want to know what your practice is like. I want to know what drives you. But what does it feel like, really, to be, there's 7 billion of us on the planet. What does it feel like to be the greatest skier in the world? What's that? 7 billion, you're number one. What does that feel like?
Well, I mean, I try not to hang on it because I'm sure that someone's going to beat my record someday. And that's, I think, the good thing about it, you know, is there's always going to be a woman that's coming up that's gonna take it over, as it should be. But I don't know. I mean, I never set out to do that. You know, I grew up in Minnesota and I met Peekaboo Street when I was 9 years old. And I just said, that's what I want to be. I want to be her. I want to be the best in the world. And, you know, I focused on the Olympics mainly. I mean, I made it onto the team when I was made it to the Olympic team in 2002 when I was 17. And that was kind of my, you know, like my main goal growing up. And then as I kind of got into it, I just, you know, and as I started to win, I just focused on winning more and, you know, the next goal, the next title. And I think I'm like a consistent one-upper, like I one-up myself.
There's no one else to one-up.
Well,
except you're one guy, but there's no one else to one-up. I mean, I don't think you have a choice.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's always, I mean, I guess not always, but most of the time there's someone that's done it before you, or there's also, what really motivated me was people telling me that I couldn't do something. You know, a lot of people over the course of my career said that I would never be anything, or once I won that I was gonna, you know, not stay number one. Like there's always been people that have said stuff about me. Like, and also with my personal life, it's been like, oh, you know, she got divorced, she's not gonna win now that she doesn't have him. It's like, there's always been something, and those little things really, really motivated me. So even when I was doing well, you know, I always found something to drive me even further.
Well, speaking of what motivates you, I actually want to go back to the beginning. And if you could tell me a little bit about how you got into this in the first place. I mean, you're a downhill skier. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but is that not one of the most dangerous sports that you could engage in? I mean, how fast are you flying down this mountain?
Yeah, the injuries are pretty severe, actually. But I think we're usually going in downhill, like between 75 and 85 miles an hour, I would say. And I think it's like you're
racing a motorcycle down a mountain on two.
Yeah, it's basically you're on a motorcycle and you just literally fall into a fence going 80 miles an hour. That's really what it's like. I'd say we have less protection than if you were a motorcyclist. Yeah.
Yeah,
but
they have full armor.
That's the fun of it.
Full gear.
That's the fun of it. Yeah, but that's what makes it fun. You know, like if there's not
almost
a risk,
dying,
then
potentially dying. That's what makes it fun. So okay, good, great. Now we've got like you thrive off of people talking shit about you, and you do great when you're on the razor's edge between life and death. How does a person like you get made? So, all right, you're born in, you said Minnesota. Start there. I want to know the origin story. What is it? Are you born with this talent? Is it a combination of you're exposed to skiing and you're so passionate about it, it's the 10,000 hour rule? Is it both? And what in the hell? Because I can only think of my kid going down a mountain that fast and literally having a panic attack every time. So you're born into your family, go.
Yeah, I mean, I had a great childhood. I grew up in Minnesota, like I said, and my mom had a stroke while giving birth to me. So my dad kind of took the reins, and he grew up racing. So, you know, we were kind of always on the mountain together. I wouldn't say Buck Hill was a mountain, but, you know, we were always on the hill together. I was in his backpack while he was coaching and going to law school before I could ski. And then I started skiing at 2.5. And I wouldn't say, I mean, my dad actually got made fun of by my coach, who had also been his coach, and he would call me a turtle. He's like, oh, poor Alan, he has a turtle for a daughter. He's Austrian, so he had like the accent. And, you know, my dad just didn't really think that I was ever, I think most people just thought I was just a kid having fun. And then my dad tells a story, when I was, I think, 8 or 9, I was skiing in Mount Hood, Oregon in the summer, and it was pouring rain, and the chairlifts were closed. And I was the only one out there training, and I would just ski down in the course and I would hike back up, and I would ski down and I would hike back up. And I remember it being awesome training because no one else was out there. And I guess my dad, you know, thought for the first time, wow, maybe she has something. And I think it was a combination of talent, but mostly it was my work ethic. You know, I definitely fought my way to where I got to. And also I grew up really skinny. I was really, really skinny. And, because of that, a lot of people thought that I would never be good at downhill. So I was kind of put into different boxes over the course of my life. And, I just had to prove to people that I didn't belong in that box, and I would just create my own box.
Okay. So here's the thing with that. The criticism shuts people down. That's where the majority of individuals are like, oh, maybe I can't do it. I guess I'm not good enough. I guess that I should give up the ghost. And, you know, what are the odds of me ever achieving this? Or who do I think I am? And if everybody is telling me that I'm not capable, I must not be capable. And 99.9% of people fall apart right there. You are the anomaly that took that and used it as turbo fuel. How? Why? Did someone teach you that quality? Like, what is it in you that instead of that knocking you down, made you get up and go faster? Do you think? Or have you ever really thought about it?
I mean, I think that I'm just stubborn, and I really don't like people telling me what I can and can't do. I like setting my own expectations for myself. And I don't know, I've always, if someone says I can't do something, I've always said, okay, I'm going to prove to them I can do it. And it didn't really matter what it was, whether it was, you know, I was 6 and I wanted to climb a tree and my friend said I couldn't, and I would climb all the way to the top. Like, I just, it was always a certain level of like stubbornness and like, I'm going to prove you wrong. And that's always kind of been in me. I don't really know where it came from, to be honest, but I know.
Was it encouraged? Did your father model it? Like, did he, when you would do it, was it like, yes, that's my girl? Was it rewarded?
Not really. No. I mean, he would kind of get mad at me because he's like, wow. You know, yeah, he's like, you know, that's not, you know, you should do what I say. No, you know, like I, you know, same point to my parents. Like, I didn't really, I wasn't good at listening, you know. It was just like I kind of marched the beat of my own drum in that way. I don't know, I just kind of always, I set my own expectations for myself, and I can't say that it's a good trait now that I'm out of ski racing. I need to learn how to, you know, be a better listener and it's not, you know, always, you know, it's not always about me. So I can't say that it's great now, but it was, I think, a driving force for me my whole life in ski racing.
I don't know that that's the same thing though. I don't think that you should listen about that. Yeah. It's totally different. I mean, we all could be better listeners. I could listen to my kids better. I could listen to my girlfriend better. We're all working on that. That's human, but this is different. Someone is making a statement about who you are and what your limitations are.
Yeah.
And was there, and I get that you're like, I'm stubborn. I've known stubborn people. I have them in my family. I've dated them. They're not the greatest in the world at something. So there's definitely more to your secret sauce here. And do you think, was there ever something inside of you that knew you were destined for greatness?
I mean, my mom says that I used to started signing my name when I was 7 years old. And I don't remember that, but she says, you know, you always used to practice their signature starting when you were 7, and you had a school report one time and they said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you said, the greatest of all time. I'm like, I don't really remember that, but I actually found the project when I was moving this summer, and I was like, wow, my mom was right. But I don't know why it was in my head that, you know, since I was so young, but whenever anything happened to me, especially kind of in my teenage years, I always thought, you know, I'm meant for something. I know I'm going to succeed, and this is just a lesson, and I'm learning this lesson, and it's going to work out. And I had a couple years where, I mean, I crashed in pretty much every race that I entered. I had just really bad years, and I just said, okay, I'm just going to keep sticking with this. I know it's going to turn out. I know I'm going to make the Olympics. I just have to keep going. And I did.
Well, that was actually going to be my next question, is when someone would tell you no, if you tried and it ended up being no, what happens next? Or were you always like, ha, 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 ha. So, you know, it's like, now you're telling me, no, I had a lot of failures along the way. And what I find even a bit more fascinating about you, in all transparency, is you can look at a Michael Phelps and the guy's built like a dolphin, right? Like, it looks like a manta ray. You know what I mean? You're like, all right, homie, you know, it, like, you were born to swim. He is a specimen of fitness. You're telling me you were skinny.
I'm not a specimen of fitness.
I mean, but like, I that's not how I would perceive you, but you're telling me that you were skinny, that people didn't look at you and go, oh, wow, she's a physical specimen, that there were failures and losses. So then that brings me back to mindset and practice. Mm-hmm. I mean, and your mindset, you're telling me about failures and how you took it as a lesson and not validation that these people were right about you. That takes years to learn. Trust me, as a person who had to learn it, and as a person who tries to teach it, it takes years to teach people to frame failure in that way. Years. And sometimes you never get them there. How important do you think your mindset was?
I do think a lot of my career was based on my mental strength, and it was something that, you know, I never really thought about how I frame things, or, you know, how do I turn this negative into a positive? I really just had one belief in that I was going to be great, and I never wavered in it. Mm. And again, like, I don't know where it necessarily came from. I know that my dad always preached to me about mental toughness. And I didn't really understand what he meant all the time. Most of the time, I just thought he was an asshole and he was telling me that I had to, you know, run the mile, and, you know, which is like, that was his, you know, he did his job and, you know, helping me do that, because, you know, I had to pass this physical test in order to make the US ski team. And again, as I said, I was not a physical specimen. I wore a size 0 jean, and I'm like flailing around. I'm very knock-kneed. I've flailed around the track. Like, I barely made the team from a physical test because I couldn't do the hex jump, which is like this weird jumping exercise. And I kept knocking over the pipe, and I almost failed it. But, you know, I just always thought there's no quitting. Like there's no, the answer is always I'm going to make it through. I never thought even for a second that I was going to fail at something. And again, I think it always came from within me, but I definitely think I was encouraged from my dad and just, you know, there's a path and the path is through work. And if you want something, if you want this truly, then you're going to have to work for it. And I think that's also just been my dad's mentality and my grandfather's as well. You know, I'm just kind of raised in a family that like we all work hard. You know, there's no substitute and there's no excuse and there's no quitting. It's just you get the job done. So I did.
I love that so much. And I think, I don't mean to sound like this kind of curmudgeon, but I think that work ethic, I'm wondering if we're losing it in our younger generations. My kids are so far removed from that. And it worries me. You know what I mean? It's like everything is easy and everything is about hacking and everything is about access. And I'm wondering, you know, are we going to see this in our next generation? I'm not seeing it as much. And maybe I'm older, maybe I'm jaded. But I'm wondering, like, are you the last fucking unicorn, dude? Like, what are you, can you give me a day in the life of that work hard, go hard or go home? What was a typical day of training like for you?
Especially since I was injured, everything became more critical. You know, when you physically are failing, you have to make up for it in different ways. So I had to really hone in on my nutrition, which, you know, 10 years ago, they were telling me to eat, you know, 3 huge bowls of pasta every day. And now it's exactly the opposite. So things have definitely changed with time. But, you know, again, since my injuries, I've really had to be very meticulous on everything that I did. So I would have all my meals delivered every day. So it was all portioned out. So I had everything taken care of. You know, cause I always get really tired. So if I found that, you know, if I got home from the gym, I don't want to make anything. So I go with what's easy and that's not what I need. So I just made sure that I got what I needed as far as nutrition. And then, you know, I would go to the gym at, leave at 5:30, get there at 6 to make sure I beat traffic. And I'd be there for probably 3 hours at least. You know, usually
three doing hours. Lifts.
That's the first session. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first session is usually weightlifting, activation, maybe some core. And then the second session is cardio, anywhere between 45 minutes to an hour and a half. And sometimes afternoon we could do cardio, like we could do, a beach workout. We could do, you know, cone drills in the sand. You know, we try to mix it up, try to work out with other people and do different things, but I'd say on average, it's about 5 hours a day. And then you have physical therapy also in between sessions. In between sessions, I always took a nap. I was a huge napper. I like can't survive without a nap. And you know,
therapy. You're training 5 hours a day. I work out for 30 minutes a day and I'm tired. So yeah, I mean, I would imagine you'd need a nap. But yeah. Okay. So you were a little lazy there. Took a nap.
I was super lazy. I took a nap and, yeah, then you do cardio and then, you know, therapy. And sometimes I'd have to do, you know, like a pool, session in the pool to get my knee to calm down. You know, sometimes I just get super swollen, always icing it. And, then dinner and then bed, you know, really that's 5 days a week. And then, usually on Saturday, it'll be just a cardio session and some stretching, but yeah, that's a week in the summer.
Okay. We have to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about that kind of discipline. And honestly, I want to get your advice for our listeners. So everyone stick with us. We're going to take a quick break for our sponsors and we will be right back with the greatest skier in the world, Lindsey Vonn.
If you've ever wanted to work on what's getting in the way of your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, you're going to want to check out BetterHelp. It's online professional counseling with your own licensed therapist. You can log into your account and message your counselor anytime, and you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. BetterHelp also makes it easy and free to change counselors to make sure you find the right fit. Plus, it's more affordable than traditional counseling, and they even offer financial aid. Visit BetterHelp.com/JillianMichaels, that's Better H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who've taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. The special offer from my listeners is 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/JillianMichaels. That's BetterHelp.com/JillianMichaels. Even though we can't have a crowd over for the big game this year, it doesn't mean that we can't enjoy the usual crowd favorites. And ButcherBox makes it so easy. I love it because every month, ButcherBox ships a selection of meats right to my home. Things like 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage pork, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, and sugar and nitrate-free bacon. The sockeye salmon is so good, by the way. Plus, ButcherBox meat is free of antibiotics and added hormones. I can also customize my box or go with one of theirs. Either way, it's packed fresh, shipped frozen, and vacuum sealed to stay that way. Right now, you can get a free rack of St. Louis ribs, one pack of bacon, and one pack of pulled pork in your first box. That's one rack of St. Louis ribs, one pack of bacon, and one pack of pulled pork for free in the first box. Just go to butcherbox.com/Jillian. That's butcherbox.com/Jillian.
All right, we are back with Lindsay Vonn. And Lindsay, you actually touched upon what I wanted to ask you about next, which is the injuries. Can you tell me a little bit about when this stuff went down in your career, first of all? Because most people, that's game, set, match. I mean, you see so many athletes where you're like, wow, this person, and then there's an injury and it's career over.
Well, I had had, you know, over the course of my career, a lot of small injuries. I had a couple of tibial plateau fractures and, you know, sprains and, you know, back stuff, but it really didn't all start to domino until my first knee injury, which was in 2013. I crashed the world championships. I tore my MCL, my ACL, I had a tibial plateau fracture.
Oh my God, dude, I have chills. I feel nauseous. You just saying that. I can't even think of the pain right now.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. It was mainly the MCL tore off the bone, which is not super common.
Like green. Literally like... Okay, sorry,
that's not even the worst one. No,
I'm
you're
so
good.
Sorry. Go. I asked you. Please continue. Anna, stop.
Yep,
so
you did ask for
listen.
It.
I want people to see what resilience looks like. Go, go, go.
I mean, you know, everyone has their obstacles. I just, you know, had to deal with mine a certain way, and I came back for the Olympics the following year, and then in preparation.
Wait, no,
for that,
no, hold on. The MCL tears off the bone. What are the doctors saying to you now? What is your coach saying to you right now? Are they like, yo, pack it up? Or are
no,
they saying like,
they're okay. saying 10 months. They're saying 10 months. Jesus. And that was in February. So I was like, I have to have it earlier than that because I need to be ready for the Olympics. So I was actually back on snow in September.
Which was
6 months. Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, so I mean, I was really lucky. I had a great physical therapist, Lindsay Wininger, and she actually works for the Orlando Magic now. She's like the head trainer there. But she was really the one that helped me get through all of my injuries. And it was the MCL, you know, takes a little bit more time because you have to let it tighten. Because if your MCL is loose, then you have major problems, especially in ski racing. But that one wasn't too bad. It was then the second ACL that really set me back because I crashed on it in November going to the Olympics, and my doctor said I could still ski on it, which, you know, I don't think was the right advice. Mm. And he said it was 50% torn. It was 100% torn.
Oh my God.
I skied on it and then it buckled in a race and it sheared my meniscus. And so when I went into surgery for that, that was much more complicated because, you know, your meniscus, those are your shock absorbers, you know, and especially in ski racing, you have to have that. So I was lucky. I went to Dr. Andrews and he calls me the daredevil Southern accent.
He's appropriate.
Where's my little daredevil? And he's the best. And he you know, fixed up my meniscus. He put about 8 sutures in each side and fixed my ACL. And after that, I made it back, but it wasn't, you know, that long before I injured myself again. It was kind of like, you know, I feel like injuries are magnets for injuries. You know, once you have one, it's for whatever reason, it just kept happening. And so, you know, the last, you know, 6 years, the 6 years of my career from that first injury were always constantly coming back from injury. And I never really had a full, I think I only had one full season where I raced in every event. Was never back to, never really back to 100% after that.
I imagine if I'm at the top of that mountain, I know I'm going down at 75, 80 miles an hour, and I know that my body is not 100%. I can imagine that the fear would be debilitating, because it's not a tennis court. Not that they're, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like we're all Serena fans in this household. Like, I appreciate the tremendous athleticism across all, you know, all sports, and pro athletes are truly incredible, but this is life or death. This is not like, ah, shit, you know, I lost the Grand Slam, let me smash my racket, which is something I would love to do. But this is like, I could die if something goes wrong here. And I feel that the fear, and I'm pretty good with fear personally, like I've learned to use it and all of that, and oh, let fear be your source of motivation, and I'm good with it. That kind of fear of physical pain, of physical threat, would be debilitating for me. I imagine for most. How are you overcoming that? I would freeze with fear, honestly. In your mind, were you even afraid?
No.
Oh my God.
Because, well, the thing is, the key is the preparation, right? You know, even though I wasn't ever 100%, I was still the best that I could have possibly been. And I still felt like I was capable of doing whatever I wanted to do. You know, even though I wasn't like I was before, you know, I knew that I could withstand what I needed to withstand to win. I just had to be a lot more strategic as time went on as to how I approached the races. You know, I had to be a lot smarter of, you know, what line do I take? You know, where can I take risk? Where can I not take risk? You know, what are the snow conditions like? I had to be very meticulous with everything that I did, because one bump taken the wrong way and I'm back into the fences and I'm injured again. So I had to outsmart everyone. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't my tenacity and, you know, my rugged fearlessness like I had before. It was much more calculated and much more strategic as time went on and I had these injuries stack up on me.
You actually made such a tremendous point. If you've got a public speaking engagement, if you're going into a college interview, if you've got a job interview, the more prepared you are, you're absolutely right. It mitigates that fear so significantly, because you're like, I've done everything I can do. I feel prepared for this. So in a way, basically, these injuries made you a better skier, because it made you so much more strategic about the sport.
Yeah, and made me have a different perspective. It made me work harder in different ways. I mean, obviously, I had to work hard at my recovery, but, you know, I learned a lot about my body. I learned a lot about what I need, what I don't need. You know, how do I approach races differently? How can I be a smarter athlete? You know, it made me evolve. I mean, you know, in that situation, you're forced to evolve, and either you evolve and you become stronger for it, or you quit. And, you know, I was for the former. You know, I wanted to make sure that I was better than everybody else. And even though I couldn't maybe physically do what I did before, I knew that I could still outsmart people. I could still, you know, take lines that other people couldn't take. And I utilized that to my advantage. And I always said, you know, my injuries made me better. They made me stronger. They're always a lesson and an opportunity to learn. You know, when you get stuck on the negative and you think that, you know, this is the end and, you know, I made this one mistake and now it's all over, you're never going to come back if you always think about that. I mean, it's just like anything. You have a job interview, you prepare for it. if you don't get the job, you study again and you find another job. You know, it's
the approach.
It's the approach and the lesson learned and how you can be better. And by the end, you know, you're hopefully pretty damn smart.
So do you have regrets? Is there the Kobe, like, I didn't get that last ring? Or is there the Serena, like, she's got one more grand slam that she's got to get, you know, to tie for the world record? Like, is there anything where you're like, oh, fuck, I wish I'd done that differently. Oh, I'm unresolved about this. Anything like that?
You know, I wish I had broken the record. It was only 4 wins away, but I just physically couldn't do it anymore. And it's not like, you know, I've had so many crashes that I've, especially after the Olympics in 2006 in Torino, I had this huge crash, and it was a really game-changing event for me because I realized how fragile my sport is. And, you know, I thought I had broken my back and I thought my career was over. And so I've always had this perspective of, you know, use every single opportunity, you know, never waste one race and get to the bottom and say, I could have done better. So I've always had that perspective, but, you know, crashing is inevitable. You know, I can't say, oh, I wish I never, you know, crashed here. In ski racing, everything happens in a split second and you can't change it. There's nothing you could have done. It just is what it is. Right. So the only thing I would say is I did have one injury where I had a slightly displaced fracture in my knee and my tibial plateau. And I was only 4 races or 6 races from the end. And I was in the lead for the overall title. It had been my 5th title. And I said, you know what? I can't, if I do this, I would need, if it becomes more displaced, yeah, I'll have to have a plate I have a plate and it'll be a huge surgery and I could put me out for over a year. Right. And I said, this isn't worth it for me. I'm going to stop. And I still won, you know, the Super G title, but I mean, could I have done it? I don't know. It was 6 races. I think about it sometimes, but you know, I could have also ended my career if I had kept going. So it's hard to keep things in perspective, but you know, I realize that at some point every athlete has to retire, and whether they've accomplished what they wanted to or not. And I've done things that no one else has done, and I'm proud of that. And you know, just it's accepting that and moving forward.
I find that it is the athletes though, like yourself, or the Kobes or the Serenas, that never stopped literally beyond shooting for the moon. Like, you know, it's like shot for over the moon and back again, that resonate the most with people, that people love the most, because in their greatness is this humanity. And you have that in spades. And I know you have a lot going on right now, and I want to talk about that. Tell me what you are most excited about now.
I mean, I'm lucky. I have a lot to be excited about. There's a lot of great opportunities, you know, in front of me. And, you know, I've always tried to prepare for the moment of retiring. You know, my dad always really taught me, you know, to look ahead, because he knows so many athletes and ski racers that didn't, and how that didn't turn out well for them. So I've kind of always been programmed to think long-term. And so when I retired, I had a lot of things, you know, a lot of things coming my way. And it's hard right now because, you know, I am excited about these opportunities, but nothing is really the same as ski racing. You know, nothing will ever really take the place of that or the adrenaline. And, you know, I was lucky enough to do an Amazon show, which we filmed last February. And I loved it. I had so much fun. It's called The Pack. And it was so much fun because I obviously got to travel with my dog, Lucy. It's a dog show. It's kind of like The Amazing Race, but with one dog and one human as a team. And so we traveled the world. I mean, I love traveling with Lucy. She's the best. She's a princess. And it just was a new challenge for me, you know, being on camera. And it was basically a live scripted show. So I had to perform on cue and I had to memorize pages of lines. And I'd never done anything like that before. And I think I got better at it, you know, as time went on. I was lucky enough to have a great producer who, you know, really coached me. And I felt like it was like skiing. You know, I had the adrenaline of the performance, you know, having to perform on cue. I had the coaching. You know, one thing people don't realize is you're always coached your whole life. You know, you get that positive feedback. But in the real world, you know, no one's saying, oh, hey, you did a great job on that project. You know, hey, that was a great business deal. Like, congratulations. It's not like that. You know, no one, you know, cheering you on or telling you how to be better. You're all on your own. So I really enjoyed having that kind of coaching experience again, and obviously traveling and things like that. So I really liked it. But you know, it's also the business side of it is always fun. You know, I like interacting with people and making relationships and meeting new people. You know, those things are all things that I really enjoy. So, you know, creating my own ski line and my own goggles and, you know, working with my sponsors, I really enjoy doing that stuff, but I haven't really found the thing that I want to do. You know, I love my foundation and I've been working hard on that since 2015. And, you know, one of the things we're trying to teach them is grit, you know, how to be.
Tell people about the Lindsay Vonn Foundation and what you're doing.
We have scholarships and, well, before COVID we had strong girls camps, which we're trying to do online now. We're trying to do some virtual classes, but basically just trying to encourage kids to be the best that they can be. And, you know, again, like I was inspired by Peekaboo when I was 9, and that was kind of the premise behind it, is that if I can spend time with kids and I can encourage them to do what they think they may not be able to do, you know, what could they achieve in their lives? So, and you know, Angela Duckworth is a huge role model for me. Her book Grit is like one of my favorite books of all time. And I would just love to be able, as you were speaking about earlier, you know, to be able to encourage and help kids be more gritty, you know, more yes. determined and
yes.
stick to it and, you know, not, and think about how to work harder and how to be better and not, you know, how do I do as little as possible?
Yes. Are you seeing that or is it just me? Like, everything is hack this and hack yeah. that and hack. And it's like, hack is code for don't Cheat. Work so hard. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, dude.
There's and it's no, like, there's nothing that replaces hard work. And it's different. And again, it's not necessarily something you can teach, but you can also encourage and show kids, you know, it's like the marshmallow trick. I don't know if some people have been telling me about this. So you give a toddler one or a child one marshmallow and you say, you can have the other one now, or if you wait 3 minutes, you can have two. Mm. You teach them if they wait long enough, if they have patience and stick-to-itiveness, they can have two instead of one. And that's kind of like the thing, is that if you work harder, if you're more patient, if you're more diligent, you can get farther than just what's right in front of you. And so it's teaching kids to think long-term instead of just what's right now.
Do you think passion is behind your ability to tolerate, quite honestly, what sounds, I mean, I'm not, but like a lifetime of hell, like 5 hours in the gym and meal delivery instead of, you know, my favorite Italian restaurant with a bottle of wine and 30 minutes in the gym 4 times a week. I mean, like, cause I've met people who go, oh, you must work out all the time. I'm like, no. And I have figured out how to hack it. I definitely have. But I listen to that and I'm like, holy shit. Like there are a lot of things I want in this world. I wonder if you said to me, Jill, you have to work this hard. I'm going to put you in the gym 5 hours a week and I'm going to deliver all your meals and you're not going to eat what you love. You're going to eat what you need. If I could do it, how much of that do you think is passion based? Or just character driven, or both?
Well, don't get me wrong. I mean, I did have my Ben and Jerry's. That was my reward.
Good. You're human.
But,
God.
Yes, I'm definitely human. I love my chocolate, my Ben and Jerry's. But I, you know, I don't know. I never really saw it as a sacrifice because I loved skiing so much. You know, I love what I did. I was so passionate about it. And, it didn't really seem like a sacrifice, to be honest. I mean, even when I was a kid, I missed prom. I didn't really have friends. I was not the easiest childhood to have, but, and I was made fun of all the time, but I loved what I did. I wouldn't care if I was, you know, made fun of, as long as I was skiing fast and I was able to be out there. You know, that's really what I cared about. So I think it's all perspective. I think really you have to be passionate about something to want to work that hard to be successful at it. I mean, you know, I wouldn't have done all that if I didn't love it. I can tell you that.
So many shy away from what they're passionate about though, right? Because if they're told it's irresponsible, you can't make a living that way. And then when you look at people like yourself, we see time and time again that when people are doing what they love, their ability to tolerate so much physical pain, so much emotional pain, have such tremendous discipline, is so inspiring. It leads by example. It says that, like, hey, maybe that passion that you have is exactly what your destiny is, right? Don't do the thing you're told you should, do the thing you truly love. I'll ask you two more questions because I know I've kept you for longer than promised here. Greatest piece of advice you were ever given?
You're fast the way you are. Don't change because someone tells you to. So I kind of took that and I use it for skiing, but I really did it, you know, use it for my whole life. You know, I am who I am. I'm happy being myself and I'm perfectly fine just the way I am.
Last piece of advice you would give the audience listening who doesn't have the confidence, doesn't know they have the discipline, doesn't know they can tolerate the pain, the fear, and the work associated with their passion. Closing statement.
I think above all, you have to believe in yourself, because if you don't believe in yourself, no one else will. So if you really want something and you believe in it, then it's up to you to work hard to get there, but you have to believe it above everybody else.
Lindsey Vonn, thank you so much. You are as inspirational in person as you are on the mountain. Thank you so much for being on the show.
But I'm going to need, for in return, I'm going to need to work out with you, and I'm going to need a hack to make sure that I can get arms like you, because 5 hours in the gym never got me arms and abs like yours. So let's do it.